Years ago, H.G. Wells visualized roads such as these in his science fiction fantasies. And today, they're a reality.
You're listening to The Afternoon Commute. John Adams. And Chris Kendall.
Welcome to The Afternoon Commute with Chris Kendall and John Adams. Today is July 28, 2015. If you'd like to hear previous episodes of The Afternoon Commute, you can go to hoaxbusterscall.com, and you'll see those posted up there alongside Chris's world-famous Monday Night Hoaxbusters call-in show, and previous episodes and the most recent episode of that are up there as well, along with some articles that Chris thinks are interesting. And one thing that was recently posted was my radio appearance on Soaring Eagle Radio with Dr. Mike Spalding, and I just want to say thank you to Dr. Mike for having me on. It was a pleasure. And thank you to Chris for always reposting my other radio interviews that I do.
Yeah, it was
our
good,
guest. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we talked about culture creation, which Chris and I talk about quite a bit. One of our staples here. And let's see, our guest today. She is a researcher, she is a journalist, she is a boots-on-the-ground reporter, she wears a lot of hats, and she has a website called thegovernmentrag.com, and she's done a lot of research into some events that have some questionable things going on with them, one of those being the 2011 shooting of Gabrielle Giffords. And I think she's most well-known for that body of work that she has done, a really deep investigative research into that whole charade. Her name is Stephanie Sledge, and we are glad to have her with us on The Afternoon Commute. Stephanie, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well, and I'm just very appreciative for you letting me be on your show tonight. And I'd like to say hello to both of you, and I'm ready to let people know what's going on in the events that's happening.
Well, yeah, great. We are glad to have you on. And why don't we just get right into it? Our audience is pretty well informed when it comes to the tomfoolery and chicanery and the fakery involved with a lot of events. And your research into Sandy Hook and Boston bombing and Gabrielle Giffords shooting is really informative when it comes to a deeper picture than just what you get. So without getting into any like kind of mainline history of those particular events and just getting straight into your investigation, why don't you go ahead and touch on the alleged shooting of Gabrielle Giffords in Tucson, Arizona, and talk to us a little bit about, I guess, Jared Lee Loughner to start.
Okay. Well, the shooting happened back in January, on January 8th of 2011, and it unfolded on the mainstream media and, of course, the AP platforms, and allegedly a 22-year-old young man by the name of Jared Lee Loughner had gone to the Safeway store there in Tucson, Arizona, at the time that Gabrielle Giffords, who is a former Arizona state representative, was holding a Congresswoman on Your Corner political event. And according to the storyline that we were fed through the mainstream media and the AP outlets, he had allegedly gone to the event that day, and he had brought his 9mm and I believe two extended magazines full of bullets, and he began to shoot randomly into the crowd that was there visiting with Gabrielle Giffords that day, and he allegedly had shot 13 people had been injured, but six people were reported dead. And so anyway, I began to watch the news as it was coming out on the mainstream platforms, and I was switching channels between ABC and NBC and CBS and just all the mainstream platforms, and I was trying to get a picture of what was really happening there, because, you know, a federal judge had been killed And that was of concern to me right away because the federal judge, excuse me, was involved in the 1994 Brady Bill. He was the judge that had actually overturned the assault rifle ban when they were trying to eliminate assault rifles back during that period of time. And so anyway, I started noticing that the AP platforms and the mainstream media was not adding up. Each channel was telling different stories. There was different witnesses, and sometimes the witnesses would be on one channel and another and telling different stories or stories that didn't add up to the story that they had told prior. And so anyway, I just began focusing on it. I became very intrigued with wondering what was really going on with this Jerry Loeffner character, who, by the way, was arrested, allegedly arrested that day at the scene and whisked away to the Pima County jail while he awaited trial, and then taken from there to a mental health facility, correctional facility, a federal correctional facility in Springfield, Arizona, where, he was forcibly medicated back into sanity and eventually pled guilty to all the crimes. So we never really got any of the answers. And so what I did was I took it upon myself to actually go to Tucson and investigate this and find out what was true and what wasn't true. And I did write a book about it. It's called Apple Zebra 11, The Loeffner Cover-Up. And I basically just expose a lot of the lies and a lot of the deep agenda that took place behind the shooting out in Tucson.
Now, let me put it this way without jumping the gun or, I want to kind of remain objective on the information, and then add our perspective a little later on.
Okay.
Is there proof that Jared Lee Loeffner was ever in court?
In my opinion, the only proof that I could obtain that he was actually in court was the actual court documents that I had obtained during the entire process of him being detained in Springfield, Missouri. I did follow his court case. I downloaded all the court documents from the PACER service. I followed, the transfer from of a lot of cases of the dead judge to the new judges that were replacing his files or his cases. And so at this point in time, I will tell you, though, that there was no actual footage, no live footage has ever been released of Jared Lee Loeffner. We've never seen any live footage of Jared Lee Loeffner, even during his so-called court hearings. He never had a trial because he pled guilty at the last minute. Although he was being forcibly medicated, I was following the court rulings during that time prior to him going. He was originally planning on going to trial, pleading not guilty, but then, abruptly he had changed his plea to guilty and game was over for him. And so at this point in time, I can tell you that, yes, there's evidence in the court system that, there was an actual case that went on, but to actually have any live footage or be shown any live footage whatsoever of Jared Lee Loeffner, it's never happened.
Stephanie, were you able to speak with anybody in that there in Phoenix there were that actually knew the guy, that actually maybe grew up with the guy or knew him personally?
Actually, I did. I went on an investigation. I had a couple of other people that were locals in the area that were researchers and investigators that also questioned this crime. And so I was able to have some contact with other researchers. And what I did while I was out there was that I had explored many options. Like I had gone to Jared Lee Loeffner's house only to find that it was pretty much bolted up and, a new mailbox was put on where it had to have a key. And they put a a great big wooden fence around the front of the house so that you couldn't see in. But I had gone and I had spoke to neighbors who lived down the street. I had also spoke to a lady that worked at one of the convenience stores that allegedly was friends with Jerry Lee Lofter. And I had also spoke to someone that to this day would like to remain anonymous. And she was somebody who lived, she claimed that she had lived next to Jerry Lee Lofter and that the story about him living with his parents was untrue, that he had actually had his own apartment. He lived next to her and that she knew him, you know, from living. They weren't really good friends, but they were just friends as apartment friends, you know, like you live next door and I live next door. And she spoke to him many times. And so, yeah, I mean, I tried to speak to as many people as I could while I was out there to try to get answers. However, it was a very difficult task considering that there was a cover up going on. And so, you know, it was very difficult to obtain information. People were afraid to talk. There were already people that were missing that couldn't be found. And, you know, there was just a lot of very interesting details with witnesses and such that wouldn't speak to anybody, but yet they would go on mainstream media, but they wouldn't have any conversation with, you know, someone like me that was actually out there looking for the truth.
Yeah, once again, there actually is no proof that he was on the scene, that he actually shot those guns, that he was anywhere near the shopping center. The interesting thing about that was I remember when the whole thing went down, I remember it was a Sunday. Is that correct?
It was actually a Saturday morning.
Saturday morning at
10:10.
Oh, yeah, interesting. So it was a Saturday morning. Okay, I knew it was one of the days I was at my mother-in-law's house, so it was either Saturday or Sunday. And I saw it come on, and what was funny was I remember how watching through the news cycles, how the story changed. Like through five news cycles,
right?
And it would constantly be updated, and they would exclude information that they had previously reported on, and then include new information. But one of the things that was interesting about it, like other things that we've seen before, they pretty much had him like picked out from the get-go. They already knew who he was, and it was all like a package type deal. And as we get further into this, I know you're going to reveal some information that is going to actually prove that this was well thought out years in advance, and people were already leading up to this in a certain degree. But yeah,
exactly.
He was not. I mean, there is no proof he was on the scene, correct?
You know, according to all the information that I've gathered, there was reports of up to four different shooters in different clothing at that scene that morning. And so that is one of the things that I have really researched deeply is the fact that it's my belief that Jerry Lee Lofter... The storyline is that Jerry Lee Lofter took a cab to the event that morning. But when you actually start digging into what was really reported and what was put out initially before they were changed, like you said, that they did change the storyline many times. And one of those changes was the fact that it went from being two shooters down to one shooter. But when you actually do the research, there was actually up to four shooters that I can actually find evidence of that were reported that day before, you know, it was before the storyline has changed. So was Jerry Lee Lofter at the scene that day? It was reported that he was, yes. But as far as all the witnesses, all the 911 calls, you know, there is really no evidence that matches the description that of Jerry Lee Lofter, you know, allegedly when he came there that day. There's many other different types of descriptions of the shooter. So, yeah, I would definitely agree with you that there's, you know,
didn't they show a photo? I'm going from memory here, but I remember watching it on TV. Didn't they show a photo of, or like a video footage of a guy in a jean jacket with long hair at like a liquor store or drug store or something?
Well, initially when they had released the photos, first they showed this real, you know, crazy looking guy that had no hair, great big eyes, looked like he was totally mind controlled, you know, and then within a few days and another photo was released with different eyes. Apparently it was photos that were released from the U.S. Marshals. And, this person had different eyes. He had scrapes on his head that would match what some of the witnesses say. But when you go back and research some of the other pictures that mainstream media had put out, you know, he's got green eyes, blue eyes, brown eyes. I mean, nothing matches from the get-go as far as his pictures. So what that was one of the things that I took upon as a task was to actually dig in and find out, you know, who the real Loughner was, in my opinion. And but yeah, that definitely is true. There was a lot of different reports as far as, you know, who was at the scene that day. And if I can recall from my memory, I remember that there was a report that there was a person running north past the Walgreens store, and he was wearing shorts and a military style t-shirt. And also there was another report from one of the actual so-called doctors that were at the scene that day, and he reported that the man was wearing white tennis shoes, khaki pants, gray t-shirt, and then other reports from other witnesses say that he was wearing a black ski mask, black hoodie, jeans. And so as you can see, like, the descriptions changed tremendously from, you know, the very beginning of the shooting. And that's one of the things that intrigued me the most was the descriptions were always changing on who Jerry Loughner really was.
Yeah, there's like photos of him where he's totally normally looking, he's like at a sporting event or something like that, and he's wearing like a university, sweater, and then
right.
looking totally middle class, normal, average, kind of typical, just run of the mill guy. And then another picture that you show where his head is completely shaved bald, and he's got this totally manic look in his eye, and that's the one that they showed repeatedly over and over.
Right, and that's why they showed it repeatedly over and over, is they wanted to instill the mind control that this person is, you know, like, this is a crazy person. And so, you know, that's definitely ties into the agenda that's happened with this case, which ties to the mental health industry. And the other thing is, too, along with his, and I'll just quickly review this, when it relates to his picture, one of the things that I definitely dove into first was I was listening to the fact that the mainstream media was constantly reporting about his MySpace page. And of course on his MySpace page was a picture of him, picture of his gun, all these, you know, just bizarre videos and such. And so anyway, during my investigation, I did obtain a police report where Jared Lee Loughner had reported his MySpace stolen prior to the shooting. And so I did find that interesting that they exploited his MySpace page, but yet at the same time, Jared Lee Loughner himself had reported, gone to the police station, and actually filed a complaint that his MySpace was stolen.
Wow, yeah, I've never heard that. That's interesting.
Yeah,
and Gabrielle Giffords was his friend on MySpace.
I think on YouTube.
Actually, yeah, it was YouTube, not MySpace, but the YouTube.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah, the Facebook, or not Facebook, but the MySpace page was taken down immediately, as far as the shooting goes. And I find it interesting that the mainstream media had access to all that, but, you know, the rest of us had to get it secondhand because it was already just taken down. And so, but I found it just absolutely mind-blowing when I did find a police report to verify the fact that this MySpace that he was, you know, that they were exploiting was, you know, reported stolen in an official manner. So anyway, but they didn't report that.
So you did a public records request at the police station and you actually got a copy of that police report where he's reporting his MySpace page stolen.
Yeah, and he actually accused one of his friends by the name of, I believe his name was Adam. But yeah, he did officially file a police report. He had gone to the police station, said that he noticed that there was somebody posting pictures of him on MySpace and claiming that they was, you know, it was Jared Lee Loughner, and that he did file a complaint, but he didn't file a complaint in Pima County, which is where the shooting happened, which is where allegedly he lived. I believe, if my memory serves correct, that he filed that complaint in Oro Valley, so which is one county over from Pima County. So it was in a different county.
Do you have a copy of that uploaded anywhere? Or?
Well, you can go to. Let's see if. I guess I'll let your listeners know. If you go to thegovernmentrag.com, I do have an investigations page that you can click on. And in there are many articles that I've written since the beginning of my investigation. And there are two articles that you can check out. One is called So Long Loughner, A Life Sentence for a Framed Patsy. And then the other one is called Jared Lee Loughner Takes Plea Game Over. And so in those two articles, I have an incredible amount of evidence where you can actually click on and pull up and see, you know, and verify evidence according to that. So, yes, I do believe that one of those two articles does have the link where you can actually read about the police report about Jared Lee Loughner filing that his MySpace was stolen.
Cool. Do you talk about Gabby Giffords and, you know, her being on his YouTube?
Well, one of the bizarre things was is the last article that I published, which wasn't very long ago, and it was titled How NASA and the Navy Aided in Trading American Guns for Technology and Littoral Warships. And I go into three plots there. One of the plots is about the technology. The other plot is about the warships. And then the last plot is about the gun confiscation movement. And one of the things that I do expose in that article is about the fact that there were certain individuals that were linked to Gabrielle Giffords and her YouTube account. And, you know, for your listeners, by the way, Gabrielle Giffords, you know, she initially was reported dead following the shooting, but then, you know, just miraculously she was alive, and her doctor had even, you know, gave her 101 chance to recover. And, so she was initially reported dead, but now she was reported alive. But one of the things that I did notice.
I'm surprised she didn't have a 33% chance of living.
Yeah, I mean, her doctor, Dr. Peter Reed, who has deep ties to the Navy, of course, and he's deeply involved in the technology which was behind the agenda behind this shooting, which was suspended animation. And he, you know, that was one of the things that I found quite interesting about that. But as far as her YouTube is concerned, yeah, he was a friend on her YouTube. And then the only other person that was linked that I found quite interesting as far as the YouTube is concerned is was a Missouri representative, and he was also involved. His name was Ike Skelton, and he was a Democrat from Missouri, and he was deeply involved, and somehow he was also you know, involved in her YouTube. I thought it was strange that she only had, I believe, two friends at the time. One was Ike Skelton and one was Jerry Loeffner. And, you know, he eventually surfaced again when they created and made and exploited the LCS-10 USS Gabrielle Giffords ships, which were recently released by the Navy Secretary, Ray Mabus, and they did a whole dedication about that, and he was there at the time as well.
Yeah, you're talking about the, it was like a dedication service, and they were going to dedicate the a ship that that had her name on it, and during the ceremony they had the picture of the ship on an easel, and they unveiled it. They had it covered up with some kind of cloth or something. They pulled it away, and the ship was upside down. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Right, and then they, I show the footage in my recent article, which can be found on my bio on the Government Rag. I do expose that in the trailer that I did for the Loeffner cover up. And you're exactly right. Like, they had presented it, and they named the ship after Gabrielle Giffords for her unwavering courage. And they also named the sponsor of the ship as who was the mother of the 9-year-old girl, the 9/11 girl that was allegedly killed at the scene that day as well. Her name was Christina Taylor Green, and also too, but you're right, they did present the ship, they unveiled it, it was upside down, and then the camera had backed up into the audience and showed a cracked stage. And so I had, you know, put it together that they had dedicated this, and of course it was upside down and cracked in half. And so to me, you know, that was the little secret. It was a sinking ship is what it is. And so that was a little riddle that had to be solved, and that was because it was presented upside down and the stage was cracked in half. So that's a sinking ship, and that should be a warning sign to America. And it is really a warning sign, because all the agenda behind this shooting is big enough agenda to, you know, it's a domestic takeover, it's a hostile takeover, and, you know, it's pretty much all in your face.
Yeah, one of the things that Chris and I suspect about this particular case is that it's a staged event, and not just staged in the manner of it's a false flag, but staged in the manner of that there's some fake deaths, and there's some fake injuries, and there's some fake shooting, and there's just basically, to put it in the parlance of the blues artist Big Maybell, there's a whole lot of faking going on. But one indicator to that was, and what kind of got me going down that way of thinking, was your investigation into Christina Taylor Green. Is that her name? Hello?
She was the 9/11 girl that was allegedly killed at the scene that day. Yeah, she was definitely put into the forefront, and, you know, her storyline is very shady. And while I was out in Tucson, I did go and try to hunt her down in the cemeteries with another researcher, only to find in the end that she was not buried anywhere, even though the mainstream media had faked an entire funeral for her. The AP press had put out where she was going to be laid to rest. And under, you know, investigation, it turned out that she wasn't anywhere in Tucson. And so, you know, there was a point during the investigation where we had to go knock on the door of the father, John Green. And John Green is the father of Christina Taylor Green. And, we did go to the neighborhood, at the time that I was, investigating the researcher or the lady that had brought Christina Taylor Green to the scene that day. the other investigator that I was with at that time went and knocked on his door and actually got confirmation that it was a lie. She wasn't buried anywhere in Tucson, and that they hoped someday that they would find her resting place. So they played out a funeral to the public that never happened.
Yeah, Chris and I were discussing that the other day, and we were talking about that, like, okay, we could see, like, having a memorial for someone. Like, that makes sense, right? Okay, we're going to have this public memorial. But it doesn't make any sense if you try to explain away why you would have a fake funeral for someone.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, I mean, I guess what the only way that I can explain about... I did go down there and obtain I was able to obtain autopsy reports of the six people that were allegedly dead, including Judge John Roll and Christina Taylor Green. And, you know, there are a lot of questionable things about those autopsies. And I write about that in my book. And one of the things about Christina Taylor Green was the fact that they do not put in her autopsy, you know, any information about the actual crime scene like they do in the other five allegedly dead people. And, you know, one of the things about Christina Taylor Green is that she, you know, was brought to the scene there that day by a lady that was involved in Cornell University mind control projects and disassociation projects. And she also worked her whole life in working as a for social services, and so that was very questionable to me. And so she lived in the neighborhood. Her name was Susan Hilleman. But one of the things that was most interesting about this whole thing that played out with Christina Taylor Green was the fact that they used her death as a reason to bring 9/11 to Tucson. They brought the 9/11 remembrance flag to Tucson, and they hung it on the corner of Ina and Oracle Street. And Obama came to Arizona, and they had a giant memorial where they had Janet Napolitano and John McCain and several others there. And they played out, you know, this horrific monstrosity of lies to the American public, and then, you know, that was what was left. They made a 9/11 marking in Tucson, is how I put it. I mean, they marked their territory.
That's that's really interesting. It's, yeah, I mean, like, when you say that there's a lady there who's involved with like Cornell University mind control.
Right.
And I'm not saying this to debate you on anything. I'm just saying this because I'm expressing my opinion. I don't personally believe that there's mind control involved with these events, like, per se, like, oh, there's this mind control assassin, he's going to go shoot a bunch of people, or that they have these mind-controlled people who show up to these events. I think a lot of times that you find these mind control people involved with it is because the whole thing is a mind control event instead of just actual individuals. I think these individuals play a particular role, and that they have these people. You always find out about these people involved with mind control because the entire thing is being played out to a public who is under mind control by being subjected to watching this event play out in what they believe is reality.
Oh, definitely, I agree with that. And maybe I should specify a little bit more about Susan Hilleman. And when I say she's involved in mind control projects, what I am basically saying is that her character is very shady. She brought Christina Taylor Green to the event that morning. You know, her history she was a graduate, I believe, in 1973 in human ecology in Cornell University, but that's not what's interesting. What's interesting is her life of how she, was involved in disassociation projects, in, you know, the psychology world, and how, her role as a social worker, You know, she had a lot of deep ties, being part of these disassociation, research projects, but only because she was in the social work world. And so, you know, that's basically where I go. Is there any proof that she mind controlled anybody? No, there's not. But what I question is that she became, she was the neighbor of the 9/11 girl, and she was labeled as the grandmother type. Like, she would purposely go and involve her life into Christina Taylor Greene's life, and she, you know, gained her trust, her mother's trust, and she brought her to the scene that day. And so, following the shooting, what was most distressing about her was the fact that the only thing that she focused on after the shooting was, you know, PTSD and pharma drugs. And so, her role in this involvement, whether it was played out as a an actual event or not, which I do believe that there was a lot of staging that happened. You know, Durley Loffner was definitely a patsy, in my opinion, but there was also actors involved, and the majority of the actors went on the mainstream. They were witnesses and people that continued to play out the storyline, but this woman actually had deep ties to this alleged 9/11 girl, and so, you know, that does say a lot as far as, you know, how social work is deeply tied, how they use children in the system. And I'm not saying Christina Taylor Greene was in the system. Her life background is questionable. I was never able to obtain true record that she was born to the Greens, simply because of the Maryland birth certificate laws that have recently changed prior to this shooting. But she's definitely got a lot of the characteristics of a lot of people that are involved in these types of events, that it's mind control on the nation is what it really is.
Yeah, and then you posted that the parents of Christina Taylor Greene bought a domain name prior to the event, where I think it was later on used to sell Christina Taylor Greene merchandise. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, basically what that was is, what it was I had obtained legal records through, you know, like doing a search on actual people that were registered with the state as far as like their organizations or, you know, like a business type registration, but yet it's a nonprofit organization registry through the state of Arizona. And one of the things that I found most interesting was the fact that Roxana Greene, who's the mother of Christina Taylor Greene, who was named as the sponsor of the USS Gabrielle Giffords, she had created a nonprofit organization, and I had found the evidence in the file, names and IDs, and that were registered with the state, and one of them was the Christina Taylor Greene Memorial Fund, and it was created on the exact date of the shooting, which was 1/8 of 2011, and then also, the Christina Taylor Greene Memorial Fund number 2 was created on 1/10/11. But the one that was the most interesting to me was in 2007, which was 4 years prior to the shooting, she had filed, you know, for this organization in the trade name of Christina Taylor Greene Products. And after the shooting is when the mother began selling those products, which were memorials, you know, for her daughter's death. So that was very alarming to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you see that in, that's something that came out with the Sandy Hook shooting. You see fundraising drives that get put on the internet like days prior to the event. That was uncovered.
Exactly.
Same with yeah, same with Boston bombing, same with it's probably some others that I don't know that top off the top of my head, but yeah, that's a reoccurring pattern, and it's almost like you know, the important payoff, you know, and that's got to be sort of you know, made sure that that's going to be all kind of ready to roll when the event happens, so up to the point where they roll it out even ahead of time so that it gets, you know, propagated to the search engines and everything's all in order and ready to go to start, you know, strike while the iron's hot and collect a bunch of funds from all the people out there that, you know, are touched by this, you know, so-called event, you know.
Exactly. And we see it in every event lately. I mean, you know, like you said, Sandy Hook and all the people behind the scenes that, you know, their houses were bought, and, you know, there's all kinds of memorial funds, and the money behind the scene is really the most important part to understand when it comes to these events. And, you know, even with the Boston bombing, I mean, you know, there was all these things. And of course we saw with our own eyes, we saw the parade that they placed before the American public, spewed out on the television sets, you know, enjoying and loving and praising martial law. And so this is just all mind control, you know, and, you know, it's meant to be played out. Just like with the Jared Lee Lofter event, you know, yeah, I can, you know, I have sufficient evidence and people can debate me, and I will, you know, debate them back that Jared Lee Lofner is a real patsy. Now, how they got him, now that's a different story. I mean, my opinion is that he was recruited through the juvenile system. He was sent through the psychology system, and he was used and played out to be, you know, a patsy. But in the same respect, they already had a stage of lies going. They already had a stage, you know, that had all these pre-planned and played actors and crisis actors or what have you, and there was already an agenda being written, like you said. Now, if someone was to come to me and say, I can prove to you that everything that you found in the court systems, all the documents, all the police reports, you know, all of that were all staged as part of this event, then, you know, we might have to reconsider a few points of this case. But the point is that as it stands right now, you know, there's behind the scenes court documents that, you know, literally prove this young teenager who, you know, was a young man when this event happened, but his history can be found through the juvenile court systems and up. And so, you know, I totally agree with you. I mean, there's a lot of definitely interesting and shady stuff that goes along with each and every one of these events, whether it's Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, the Aurora shooting, the Oklahoma bombing, the Jared Lee Lofner event.
Why don't you get into the strange person that Gabrielle Giffords is and all the weirdness with her?
Well, Gabrielle Giffords was... you know, she served as an Arizona state representative for a couple of years, I believe in 2007, was when she was elected. And one of the things that I do touch on in my book, and I also have in some of the articles that I cited earlier, they also touch on, you know, how 2007 was an important year as far as when this event was planned, or I guess written in my state, in my opinion. But one of the things about Gabrielle Giffords is she was married to she is married to Mark Kelly, and Mark Kelly works for NASA. He's in the Navy. He's an astronaut. He has a twin brother who is Scott Kelly, who, as we speak, is involved in the International Space Station studies. But one of the things that I find most interesting about Gabrielle Giffords is she was allegedly the target at the at the Congresswoman on the Corner event where Jared Lee Lofner allegedly shot her in the head. But following the shooting, after she survived and after they performed this this procedure on her called suspended animation, which allegedly saved her life. She has been coming back into the forefront, but her role is gun confiscation. But her and her husband have started this nonprofit organization, and I believe, I guess I have to look up the name, but I think it's like Americans for Responsible Solutions. And what that is it's a gun control lobby group that is basically helping change the laws for more gun background checks as far as like when you apply to get a gun. But the most interesting part about it is that they're, you know, she's behind the scenes with her astronaut husband to not only change the laws for more responsible gun controls, in her opinion, but also to give a backdoor into people's medical records to tie in if a person has ever been on any, you know, SSRI drugs or any type of mental illness drugs that would prevent them from owning a gun in the future. So she plays a very important role in the gun confiscation movement. And they're using victim hero scenarios, which is what I point out in my article about how the NASA and the Navy have traded American guns for these things. And so, anyway, it's worth a read. But there is a deep tie to mental illness. That's what a lot of these shootings, in my opinion, are about, is the deep ties to mental illness, to the DEA, to the health department, to Americans owning guns. So it's just another way to confiscate guns. And as we see in the latest shooting, the one down in Louisiana where the man commits suicide, I mean, we already have these actors that are coming out in different countries now begging Americans to, you know, change their gun laws. And so, I mean, I think that the majority of America is starting to realize that there's something serious going on as far as the gun confiscation movement and the fact that we have a dead judge, you know, and he didn't get talked about very much during that event. He, you know, he played an important role in changing the gun laws and standing up and saying, you know, that's unconstitutional and you're not going to, there's not going to be an assault rifle ban. And that was back in 1994. And so now he's dead.
Stephanie, I wanted to ask you this real quick before I forget. I tried to get a hold of this guy myself. I was going to try to do a phone call with him. And he was an emergency responder that got called to the scene of the Gifford shooting, and he refused to go. He said, I'm not gonna participate in that. He said, I'm not gonna do it. And, you know, they subsequently fired him. Are you familiar with who I'm talking about? I can't remember his name.
Yes, I am. And, let's see, I did write about him in my book, and let's see, I'm trying to pull it out of my memory right now, but I do remember that there was a person that had refused to go to the scene that day, and he literally was ridiculed by the, you know, of course, the media out there, you know, labeled that he wasn't going to go. And I believe, I want to say his name is Mark. Let's see. I wish I could pull the name back up to me right now. I want to say it's Mark Umstrom, but anyway, I know who you're talking about. And I did go to his house the day that I was investigating. I spent some time in Tucson, and I did go to his house. His name was Mark Ekstrom, and he did refuse to go to the scene, and he cited political bantering is what it was. And he was demonized, I know, after that, and because he refused to go to the scene that day. But you know, I wanted to know what the real reason why he didn't go, and I wanted to know exactly what he meant by political bantering. And so, anyway, he did refuse to comment anymore after the initial interviews with, like, the local Tucson papers And, you know, I couldn't get him to comment with, you know, me or any of the other independent researchers. But as far as I know, you know, like the Arizona Daily Star, I do remember that they quoted Mark Ekstrom saying that he was on duty at the station that day and that he was also trained to handle large medical emergencies. So he had a big role in, like, what his knowledge was. And he refused to go that day, and he cited political bantering. So I do remember that quite well. But I did go to his house, and there was a sheet that was pulled up over his big main window in his house. But I knocked on the door several times, and there was no answer, so I was unable to obtain any type of comment from him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that I can't remember if I found his number or not, or if he just didn't return my call or what, but, he didn't want to talk about it, huh? Yeah, he didn't want to go into any detail about it. But that, you know, you think about that, okay, this guy is medically, he's trained as an, you know, he's like he said, he's one of the, sort of higher ups as far as dealing with, you know, mass shootings or something like that, and he's
right.
Refusing to go and take care of people. And, you know, citing kind of, you know, political reasons or something like that. And I mean, to me, I am 100% positive that the guy knew the thing was a stage setup thing. And because the people, especially higher up, would have to have some knowledge of this, you know, in the medical fields. And they get locked into participation in some form or another. I don't know exactly how, but you know, they participate. There's a payoff. There was like a big payoff with the Boston. I think everybody that responded to the Boston thing got, you know, tremendous bonuses and stuff for it. So there's like this payout for their participation and their silence on, you know, what they're actually, you know, experiencing there when they're in these events. And I think that's pretty strong circumstantial evidence of fakery myself. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, definitely. And so that's a big statement in this event, is what Mark Ekstrom had to say, you know, that he, because like you just said, I mean, someone that is that high up that has the authority in those types of large medical emergencies, and you know, they are not going to say that they're not going because of political reasons, you know.
That really makes no sense, though.
No.
Does it?
It does not. And, you know, so that says a lot. It says two things. It says, one, that he knew that there was some staging going on and that there was going to be some agenda and Obama was going to fly in and make a mockery out of it and bring 9/11 to Tucson. And it also makes a statement as well that he may have been very true to his morals and values about, you know, being a truthful person, because, you know, I mean, you know, if someone knows ahead of time that they're going to be involved in something that's going to be complete trickery upon the nation, I mean, where do you choose? Do you choose to be part of that trickery, or do you refuse? And so I'm sure there's definite consequences, and it would be very interesting to follow up and find out, you know, what has happened to that man.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, I'm just kind of skimming through this article here that's posted at CNN talking about it. And then it's saying, well, you know, he got so upset by what he saw on television that he couldn't respond. It's like, that is how preposterous is that? You know,
yeah.
He's going to get squeamish by something he saw on TV? I mean, give me a break. That's just absolutely nonsensical. But, yeah, it just goes to show that even though somebody can basically scream from the rooftops, hey, something's up here, everybody, and I'm in the middle of it, it doesn't matter. People are so dull to anything, they won't get it. You know, it's like because you hear that a lot. It's like, oh, well, you know, if this was something that was orchestrated or something, somebody somewhere would speak out, you know. It's like, well, people do. People do all the time. Nobody listens. You know what I mean? And nobody's picking up on it. Because, yeah, there's other instances of this, similar things, I'm sure. But, you know, people have to be able to use their brains and think and say, why would a guy do that? You know, unless there's something seriously, seriously wrong with the so-called event.
Well, exactly. And even when I went to visit Jerry Lee Lofter's home and speak to some of the neighbors, you know, it was all just played out. You know, I experienced the most bizarre situation that it's ever occurred as far as, you know, investigating my concern in this case. And that was the fact that there were guards, I believe were literal paid guards, probably retired police officers or military people that were literally put in these, you know, either they lived in the neighborhood or they were put there to guard the story afterwards. Because I spoke to a gentleman after the event when I had gone to Tucson, went to his home, Jerry Lee Lofter's home, and started talking to neighbors, and I encountered a gentleman that was, in my opinion, you know, he was very defensive. He acted as if that he was there to tell a particular story. And, you know, he had all the right answers as far as mainstream media was concerned. And so, yeah, I mean, there was quite a bit of, you know, and of course I was followed by the police and harassed. And, I mean, it was not a very good investigation as far as, like, the, you know, things that had played out on my platform to find out the truth. But in the same respect, you know, I do believe that there were people that were, you know, there were people that were paid to guard the story. And, you know, we all know what the storyline was behind that. And that is definite, you know, gun confiscation. And of course they killed a judge that had been working on many cases along with gun confiscation, but also that had to do with the Forfeiture Act, and, you know, who was also had knowledge of what was going on at that time, and that was the Fast and Furious scenario. Hmm.
What about Dr. Michael LaMole? You know, Chris called. You should go check that out. It's posted on the wall of calls at Hoaxbusters. Go check out Chris calling the University of Arizona Medical Center asking for Dr. Michael LaMole, and literally nobody knows who he is. It's really bizarre. I know he is the chief of staff now or something. I read that as of 2013, he's like the chief of staff over there, but it's kind of funny after they made this whole big deal about how, you know, he's on TV and he's performing this alleged suspended animation. Chris calls over there and nobody has ever heard of him. Nobody knows who he is. And I know that he's Dr. Oz's wife's brother or something. But he got a big payoff just by becoming the chief of staff at the medical center.
Well, I'm going to have to correct you on that, because the chief of trauma at the medical center of the Arizona is actually Dr. Peter Ree. And Dr. Peter Ree is deeply involved in this as far as I'm concerned. And Dr. LaMole was on the medical staff as well. And he was one of the doctors, along with Dr. Peter Ree, that had appeared on mainstream media. And they had been given, you know, they were giving the public, like, updates as far as, like, Gabrielle Giffords, you know, how she was doing following the surgery. But...
I've seen an article saying as of 2013 he was named chief of staff.
Well, he might have been chief of staff, but now, and I guess chief of staff to what, you know, if it was the trauma, then that would have been Dr. Peter Ree, but if it's chief of staff of something else, then you probably are correct. But as far as Dr. LaMole, like, one of the things that I found and I wrote about in my book about Dr. LaMole was that he played an important role in saving Gifford's life. And, you know, his daughter is Lisa LaMole, and she's married to Dr. Oz. And I find that just absolutely stupefying, you know, as far as like the relationship there. But Dr. Lamoli also has some very interesting points about him that I found and I wrote about in my book. And one of the things was is that he was initially after the event, there was, you know, several other websites that were coming out with putting out like drawings or not drawings, but comparisons as far as like who Dr. Lamoli was. And he was accused of being a man by the name of David Weiss and, you know, being called a player and that he was not really a Dr. Lamoli, but his real name was David Weiss. And so anyway, that was real interesting because there, you know, that caused me to go and do a research on him. And what I had found was that he had a background in management. And he worked for Kraft, he worked for Nestle, he worked for Pepsi, and that was basically according to his own online bio of this individual, David Weiss. And he was also a partner in a film with CGI Productions, and he also had close ties to Radiant Helix Media, which resides there also in Tucson. And so it sparked an investigation as far as me looking into Dr. Lamoli. And when I did look into Dr. Lamoli, that's what I discovered, which wasn't exposed before, was the fact that he did have such a close relationship with Dr. Oz. And, you know, the fact that he, his biography on the University of Arizona was much different and created actually 2 days after the shooting. I'm sorry, 3 days after, wow. I believe it was 1/11/11. So his bio was created 3 days after the shooting in the College of Medicine, according to, you know, the University of Arizona's own works there. But also, too, what I found interesting was that there was a David Weiss who, like I said, he was the one that was being compared to as the actor. But what I did find interesting out of this whole thing was that there was a comment that was found on the Judge John Roll's findagrave.com site, and it said something like, "Your Honor, may God, you and the other victims of this senseless murder rest in peace, Judge," or something like that. It was pretty similar to that. And it was signed David Weiss. So that's something that's very interesting as far as whether David Weiss and Lamoli are actually the same person or, you know, whether they're not.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. He was listed on the Radian Helix, what is it, media group or something like that?
Right.
Basically kind of an actor's troupe or something like that. Is that correct? I'm trying to remember all this from a while ago.
Yeah, his name was
Studio.
Right. And I did go out there and I did try to communicate with them, but as soon as I went on the property, I was pretty much told to leave, and then I was followed for several miles by a group of police officers, and so you know, I was basically just whisked away from even speaking to that studio company.
Wow, you're pretty gutsy. I don't know. I'd be pretty nervous doing that.
Well, it was very intimidating, that's for sure. But you know, at the same time, it's like, well, you know, what have I got to lose? You know, America needs to wake up and they need to find out what's going on. And you know, there's so many things on the internet that, you know, the internet is cluttered with not only truth but disinformation as well, and so it does take real investigative journalists. You know, they're hard to find nowadays to actually go and ask the questions, but there are quite a few that do, and so you know that's really important, I think, especially when we're in this hostile takeover right now of America.
John, I know that. I think it's getting close to time where you might have to drop off, so I'm going to let you ask any questions until you got to go.
No, keep going. Go ahead. Keep going.
Okay. Well, yeah, that Yeah, that's interesting that the guy, you know, I called the, okay, I found two numbers for Michael Lomoli there, and he was listed at the, at one place, I guess the University of Arizona, and then there was also a listing for him as a, on staff at the Veterans Administration Hospital there in Phoenix. And I don't know what exact capacity that he worked there at, but he was listed as a surgeon there, maybe on some sort of advisory capacity or something like that. And that was on his site or his bio page, which is gone now, by the way.
He was the chief of the Division of Neurosurgery is what they titled him as. So Dr. Peter Ree was the trauma surgeon, chief of trauma. So you're right about that. He was the chief of Division of Neurosurgery, according to his bio.
Yeah, when I called, I got a hold of his receptionist, and then she was like, oh, yeah, he's the greatest guy, you know, since, you know, Gandhi or whatever. And then, you know, she didn't say that, but you know what I mean. So she was obviously familiar with what she thought was Michael Lomoli, the surgeon. And I said, okay, yeah, okay, great, and all that. And then I picked up the phone. I called the Veterans Administration, and I got into contact with a couple of surgeons there that worked on the staff, and they were like, well, we have no idea who you're talking about. And I said, well, you know, the guy that saved Congresswoman Gifford's life, it was all plastered all over the news for however many days, that guy, the surgeon, the guy that operated on her. And said, nope, sorry, we don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, he allegedly there was a team of surgeons that had come together, and they had performed this so-called experimental technology procedure on her called suspended animation. And that's another thing that I write about in my recent article. And that is, you know, why that technology was used and how NASA and the Navy gained from that using this political event, this shooting, and how it, you know, these doctors were in the forefront. And so, I mean, I totally agree with you. And there was another doctor on the scene, which is very rarely talked about. He was in the mainstream media ahead of time. You know, he was the one that allegedly, you know, was there at the crime scene the day he was at the event. And he held her pretty much together until they came to get her. And his name was Dr. Stephen Rail. And I do expose him in my video, my official trailer on my book, which is Apple Zebra 11, The Loeffner Cover-Up. And I expose him and his details as far as, like, how he himself, you know, here's a doctor that claims he had 18 years of, emergency medicine surgery and, you know, being a doctor in emergency medicine, and he can't even get the story straight. He describes the shooter as wearing navy blue sweatpants and sneakers and clean-shaven with short hair. So here they're showing us a picture of Jerry Lee Loeffner with no hair, shaved bald, and, you know, the doctor at the scene that day is describing him of having short hair. And so, anyway, I do have some intel behind this Dr. Stephen Rail. And he does have a, you know, like if you search his doctor records as far as like finding out if he's licensed, it does come up. But I'm not 100% convinced that, you know, everything that was said by Dr. Stephen Rell was true that day. And, you know, that includes the fact that, you know, he's got 18 years of, you know, medical experience in emergency medicine, and he couldn't even describe how the bullet went in. Did it go in from the front to the back to the back to the front? I mean, he could not even describe really? That properly. So, yeah. So there's quite a bit of questionable doctors involved in this whole shooting. And same with Sandy Hook. I mean, behind the scenes, there's dead doctors all over the place.
Really? Wow. Did you see the, there was a television show that aired like 2 weeks or something like that before the Gifford shooting, And the plot in this television show was a shooting at, like, a university, and one of the students gets shot in the head, and part of her skull flies off, just you know, precisely like happened to Giffords. And then they describe a procedure where they had to freeze the skull and do all that, just like they did to Giffords. Were you aware of that?
No, I don't believe that I am. I guess if you knew the actual name of the, you know, it might ring a bell. But as far as what you were describing to me, I was thinking about something else that had aired during that time period, and that was an episode from Law and Order called Hayden's Track. And what that was it was basically an episode where it was titled Hayden's Tract. And it was basically a reenactment of the shooting, of the Gabrielle Giffords shooting. So, but as far as what you're describing, no, I don't believe anybody's ever brought that to my attention, but I'm very interested in it.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it now, see if I have it saved in my notes here. Yeah, I remember seeing that, and which, yeah, I'll just put this out there. I mean, because I think, like, if somebody's taking the position that, okay, so they get a mind-controlled Patsy and they set him loose in a crowd, and his objective is to, you know, get a body count for the sake of the, you know, the operation, and, you know, maybe even they have backup shooters or whatever on the scene. The idea that they can kind of guarantee that they're going to shoot Giffords in the head, blow part of her skull off, but, you know, kind of delicately shoot her so, you know, it doesn't actually blow her skull apart. So they want to just take a segment of her. I mean, you see what I'm getting at? It's like, that doesn't seem even remotely plausible to me. But, you know, especially if you're,
And a lot of these, thanks. I was going to say, and a lot of these events that have obvious fakery involved with them, and Chris and I have documented this. You can go check it out on the Hoaxbusters blog. You can see how there's pre-scripting in the media with movies and TV shows, and they always pre-script it, you know, predictive programming style stuff. But there's an element to it to where, you know, there's not a possibility of it being real, like taking place in a real, in a real atmosphere with randomness. What seems to be, what I would think would be a lot more easier in the long run is you have an event that's totally planned out, just like a movie. And that way you can guarantee the amount of victims that you want, and you can guarantee that the people who you want to, quote-unquote, die or get, quote-unquote, wounded, they actually will die and will get wounded because it's all fake. Because in a real setting, you could not guarantee that. You could not guarantee that somebody wouldn't pull out a concealed carry and shoot the alleged mind-control assassin. You also could not guarantee, even if you were to go the route of, oh, this was done by an MKUltra assassin who is the super soldier, even in the MKUltra stuff, there's not actual real proof that super soldiers exist. And most of the time, these guys turn into basket cases, not into super soldiers. And that's kind of, and a lot of the stuff that originally, you know, the original so-called research into this, you know, Manchurian Candidate-type shooter, they have very questionable ties to intelligence agencies, putting that out as kind of a rabbit trail. I'm not saying that there isn't mind control. I do believe that there is mind control, but I don't think in this specific area that there is mind control shooters. It would be a lot less messy and a lot easier to just kind of fake it, pretty much.
Well, and what I'd like to respond to as far as what I'd like to propose is the fact that you know, I agree with you definitely on that. And I've done a lot of research into mind control, and I've read a lot of stuff about mind control. And when it comes to Jerry Loeffler, you know, we have to take into account, you know, like, what is really mind control? Like, how do we expand it out past what the CIA did, or, you know, what the definition as far as, you know, a lot of the alternative media puts out with mind control. But I can tell you that, you know, there, when it comes to someone, you know, like Jerry Loeffler, when I say he might have been a patsy, you know, we have to look back on his history. I mean, here's a young teenager that was involved in the juvenile system. He got in trouble with some drugs, paraphernalia, and just minor things like defacing a sign, you know, being pulled over with the marijuana and stuff like that. Those are records that you can actually find. But the thing is what leads me to believe that there was some type of something that happened to Jerry Loeffler as far as whether it controlled him to go to the scene that day or become a patsy in himself, whether he was just an innocent person that was taken down, used as a way to change the legal system, which is what happened during this case. But, you know, he had ties to the juvenile system, which put him into what's considered a program where they... you know, it's basically a program that people in trouble at that age, they can go into, and if it they complete the program, their records can be expunged or their charges can be removed. And so Jerry Loeffler did go down that road with the juvenile justice system. And one thing that I researched, you know, deeply into the juvenile justice system is, especially out in Tucson, was the fact that it has deep ties to Bernadine Dorn, who is married to Bill Ayers. And she has very deep ties to the way the juvenile justice system runs here in America. And, you know, one of the things that we didn't even find out about until way after this event, because the mainstream media kept pushing the fact that Jared Lee Loeffler was a loner and he went unnoticed and he had a mental illness, but nobody noticed or helped him, which was a total lie. And what really was I had come across an obituary a year later after the event by the name of Dr. Thomas Britton. And Dr. Thomas Britton had a high top DOT clearance. He was a psychologist, and it was admitted in that Jared Lee Loeffler had actually seen him, and he came up dead of honestly, I can't remember what he died of right now, but it was a mysterious death. And anyway, he died a year after this event. And, you know, and then 2 weeks later, Gabrielle Gifford's co-author, Jeffrey Zaslow, who was a New York Times writer, he helped write the book Gabrielle Giffords wrote after her shooting, and he was dead 2 weeks after that. So Jerry Lee Loeffler did have ties to the mental health industry. He had to go through treatment because of his plea bargain during his juvenile justice, you know, situation. And so was he a patsy that was mind control, where they just electronically mind controlled him or something? I really don't believe so. But was he a patsy where he was a young man that was in trouble, you know, easily influenced, saw a psychiatrist that had ties to the Department of Defense? Yes. I mean, there's some deep clues there that, you know, makes you want to research more as far as that. But of course, the psychologist is now dead, so there's no more research involved in that as far as, you know, talking to him directly about what his ties were. But I would like to go visit Jared Lee Loeffler and actually talk
Chris?
To him.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Chris?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, I think Stephanie dropped out. Were you saying something, Stephanie?
Were you able to hear me?
I didn't hear you. I think I was talking over you because you dropped out.
Oh, Well, I was still talking, so I'm not sure how much of that you heard, but anyway, as long as we can hear each other now.
Well, what I was going to say is, on that note, talking about Boston bombing, Chris, remember you and Marcus a long time ago were talking about how Gokhar Tsarnaev, that there is, he's like the only person with that name, the Joker, right? Weren't you guys talking about that, how that's not like a common name for Chechenian people?
Right.
And it just so happens that, you know, he comes out right after, you know, the alleged Aurora shooting with the Joker and all of the alleged programming involved with the Batman, with the Sandy Hook and the Aurora in the Batman movie and the Joker. And so, you know, it's just always funny. Like I said, I don't want to flog a dead horse here, but yeah, all this scripting is out there. And I could possibly entertain the idea of what you're saying about how, about, you know, that they could use a patsy. I'm sure that there's some people out there who are definitely patsies and do actually sit in jail cells for crimes they had nothing to do with, and literally, when they're getting arrested, they don't even know, you know, up from down, like, hey, what is this all about? I'm sure that definitely happened, whether it be on a big level like this type of case, or whether it just be something local and somebody gets blamed for it. But as far as the events themselves, and you know, I think that, you know, in the case of the Boston bombing, it was funny too, because that I was tuning into Chris's good buddy Alex Jones when the Boston bombing was going on. I was listening to all of the, as you term it, Stephanie, and as we also term it over here, the mainstream alternative media news reports that were coming out. And it was interesting to note that the Tsarnaev brothers were, it was almost like it was like the mainstream alternative line of that there was, you know, this was a drill or whatever. I don't know what happened, but the Tsarnaev brother thing was like a latecomer. It was like a late storyline that got tagged on to the end of it. It was really bizarre. And, you know, I remember, listening to it and going, wait a minute, where did this whole thing with the Chechen brothers just came out of the blue all of a sudden? And all of a sudden they were the ones getting blamed for the whole thing. So it was interesting how that all played itself out. But then it was also interesting how the majority of the mainstream alternative media, except for my good buddy Chris here, who that's how I actually got turned on to him, was not covering the fact that there's obvious fakery going on at the Boston bombing. Obviously, the guy being wheelchaired down the street with bloody stumps that just happened to be blown off in, like, and look like, you know, like they're blown off in the exact same spot on each leg. And, and he's getting wheelchaired down the street. Meanwhile, there are plenty of gurneys to go around for people with lesser injuries. But, yeah, what do you make of the Boston bombing?
Yeah, it looks like we lost about, I think about 30 seconds, maybe a minute of audio at this point. I just wanted to let everybody know this, that's listening to this, this recording, that, had a software crash right at this point. And so now the call will resume.
To induce mind control and to change laws and to completely destroy our way of life. And this is exactly what's happening. It's what happened in the Boston bombing as well. And I can tell you from behind the scenes that there are things that aren't talked about. And those things are things like how the laws were actually changed. And as we see in the Boston bombing, I mean, you know, there's always something that has to do with, you know, the law itself and how it's changed, you know, whether it's the death penalty or forcibly medicating someone, like we see The events behind the Jared Lee Loughner, one of the agenda behind the events, it wasn't only gun confiscation, but they changed the laws. And what they did was they allowed Jared Lee Loughner to be forcibly medicated, quote, back to insanity, so he could stand trial. And that is a form of torture, to forcibly medicate and to go along to get along. And this nation allowed it to happen. And what happened was, is Jared Lee Loughner set a precedent to be forcibly medicated, a prisoner to be forcibly medicated. And so what that means in the future is the fact that, you know, now it's okay because of a judge in Arizona to forcibly medicate a prisoner. And so, and we see it with the Boston bombings. There's all these things behind the scenes. You know, you got the same lawyer as Jared Lee Loughner, has the same lawyer as the Boston bomber, and the same lawyer as, you know, the 9/11 Massawi and several others, Susan Smith, you know, just the Unabomber. I mean, she's a planted lawyer. Their design, and what people aren't hearing on the mainstream media and the alternative mainstream media, is the fact that these people are working behind the scenes to destroy America over these events. But all, what do you hear about in just mainstream and alternative media? All you hear about is they're a mind control patsy, they're on pharma drugs, and blah, blah, blah. But you're not hearing what's really going on and how these events are actually changing our legal system. Just like with the Aurora shooter, you know, during that time period when he was obtained, a judge allowed him to be put on truth serum, you know, so they could determine whether he was actually mental or not. And so what does that tell you? That's a form of torture. So our legal system is being changed in the forms of torture, and it's being changed as far as the laws are concerned. And so those are the things that are hidden behind the scenes. It's not just about, these are medically agenda-tied events. I mean, I call them special medical ops, and the reason why I call them special medical ops is because they are deeply tied to the medical establishment, and they're deeply tied to changing our laws, which are deeply tied to not only mental health industries, but the people behind the scenes. A lot of people like to blame DHS for everything when it comes to gun confiscation, but if you actually do the research, you will find out that it's actually the Department of Health and the Surgeon General is responsible for taking the guns away. And they are doing everything they can, including using these events as reasons to blame mental illness. And so people go along to get along. They're mind controlled. They think, oh, well, you know, people like that shouldn't have guns. Well, that, you know, they, the pharma drug dealers for years and years and years have literally instilled mind control into people through television sets, through ads, through you name it, that if you have this symptom, you need to go on this drug. And so for the last 25 years or so, people have been going along to get along and believing their doctors, and they're going on all these, you know, SSRI drugs and all these mind control drugs or whatnot. And literally, it was all a ploy from the get-go to create a huge list of people that are not going to be eligible for guns in the future. So what a way to gun confiscate, right? I mean, this is like why the alternative media is blaming Dianne Feinstein for being the biggest gun grabber. We got Mark Kelly and Gabrielle Giffords behind the scenes using this event and exploiting others like the Sandy Hook shooting. And, you know, they've got it all tied together, all of it.
Yeah, and they all read off the same.
But go ahead, Chris. I was just going to say real quick,
yeah,
I do have to exit here. It's been a pleasure talking with you, Stephanie. And
thank you.
Maybe we can do it again and keep talking to Chris. And Chris, I'll talk to you another time. I just want to say it was very fortunate for the gun grab industry that when James Brady passed away, that they got another headwind with him. Luckily for them, so
a successor. Yeah,
that's interesting.
With Chris, maybe you can bring this up with Stephanie since we've talked about it so many times. You bring up I work for a bullet manufacturer, Stephanie, and you know, I shoot guns periodically. I'm not like a crazy. I'm not implying that people who own guns are crazy. I'm just saying I don't shoot all the time. I'm not a rabid shooter or anything like that. But it's amazing the kill rates that these guys have in these events. It's amazing the headshots. It's literally really hard, even if you're a good shooter, to hit a moving target. And yet these people are, usually a lot of the stories are, they just found a gun and decided to go, shoot some people, and then next thing you know, they're machine gunning, people like it's a movie or something like that. So I will leave you with that, and I will, listen on the flip side then.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. It was very nice talking to you, and thank you for having me on the show. And I totally agree. The success rate of these bullets, and the fact too that I counted all the bullets, and I went and combed through every single victim and every single autopsy report, and I counted all the bullets. And I don't know how Jerry Loughner did it, but he shot more people than he had bullets for. And that was very interesting to me. I mean, how do you do that, right? Unless there's other people involved. And the fact, too, that one of my contributing writers, George Freud, he's from Canada, he had brought to the table during that time the fact that, Gabrielle Giffords had survived a 9mm bullet, a point-blank rate, to the brain. And, the high velocity in that and such. And then, he also exposed the fact that they use red and blue marking rounds in 9mm calibers. They're known as, I believe they're known as special effects small arms marking systems. And so, those were things that were also cited. And, I found that all interesting as well. So was it a drill? I mean, I believe there's evidence that there was a drill going on, and they used that drill as a way to possibly assassinate a judge and to carry on the agenda and, more than likely, capture a patsy in the process so they could take that person through the legal system and change things that they believe need to be changed so that they can further destroy America. And so they have been, and they will continue to do that, and they do it through the legal system.
Right. Yeah. And I'm glad you point that out, because it's important. Okay, these were staged events and all that, to at least one degree or another. I don't know what different people make draw different conclusions about just how real or fake or whatever it is, but the point is that it's important to point out. It's like, okay, so what is the objective with this stuff, and what is being done? And the idea that Loughner is a real guy and that he is going through a certain process like you're talking about, I mean, I really I don't think that conflicts at all with my particular position on the nature of these events. I don't think that and because whatever is going to serve the overall intended purpose is what's going to be used. So you take a guy that's already in the system, and he's got a mental health issues in his background, and set him up as a patsy, and then he's taken through a process of being forcibly medicated, based on this idea that he shot up a bunch of people, he's dangerous, the people out here with mental health issues, I think there's more than one message being communicated, and I think one of the messages is that your cousin or your uncle that has got bipolar. I was myself personally was diagnosed bipolar, so I know a lot about this stuff. But then I think there's a message also that's being communicated that, that person that that's diagnosed schizophrenia or bipolar, well, these are dangerous people that could, just snap and kill you at any time. When, statistically, that is actually, if you take the number of violent people that are among the so-called mental health community or whatever that are being diagnosed, actually their rates of violence are lower than the rest of the population. So it's that you have you have that, so that's like totally opposite of the truth. So and then you have the we went into this multiple times on the calls with the statistical improbability of killing a bunch of people, and especially surviving a headshot. It's like if you have a penetrating head wound from a gunshot, this is another interesting thing, that if you get shot in the head, you will more than likely survive, because what's generally going to happen is it's all dependent on different variables like the caliber of the weapon and stuff like that, of course, but what generally happens is you'll have like a grazing head wound where the bullet will deflect off your skull, because your skull is convex, or so the bullet is like a will more than likely deflect off your skull, and then it's not going to be pleasant for you, but you'll more than likely survive that type of wound. And overall, if you get shot in any part of your body or general area, or I shouldn't say that, but I should just point out that there's this, by most statistics out there, that 80 to 90% of people who are shot or gunshot wound victims survive. But generally speaking, if you get shot in the head and you have a penetrating head wound, your chance of surviving that is like 5%. So yeah. The stuff we're seeing played out in these events are take those statistics and turn them inside out. Literally, I mean, the statistical probability of the stuff we're seeing out there with these mass shooting events is actually inverse to what is actually true for shootings in general. You see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree with you, what you're saying there, because that is all evidence that has to be considered. And I've definitely looked into a lot of that and read a lot about, bullet wounds and all that, mostly because this agenda ties deeply into, with the suspended animation, the agenda behind that was for battlefield soldiers. So, like when I say special medical ops, these are actual military-based special medical operations. They're not just ploys of just your local police department. However, they usually are involved in. Of course, once you're involved, they have some type of brotherhood secrecy where anybody that goes outside of the box, will be damaged or whatnot. And I agree. And when I went down into Tucson and I actually asked for the autopsies, which, they seemed so shocked about, anybody even asking about it. I must have been the first ones to ever want to obtain them. But anyway, one thing that I found interesting was the fact that all the bodies were identified by the Pima County Sheriff's Office or the Pima County Medical Examiner's Office. So none of them were identified by their family members or friends or anything like that. So, yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, there's all kinds of things about the head wounds and questionable things about the shot that Gabrielle Gifford suffered or any of the other victims, in my opinion. There's definitely a lot of questions. Like, for instance, there was one witness, her name was Mary Reed, and her daughter allegedly, she was almost considered a hero in many ways because she had called 911 when the shooting was taking place, and I had listened to these 911 calls specifically for her because she was on mainstream media with one of the mainstream people, and she was basically explaining what happened, how it played out, the shooter, what she did during that time frame. But when I listened to the 911 calls, her story to the 911 operator was extremely different. In fact, they had portrayed this thing to Anderson Cooper in the media following the shooter that she was worried about her mom because her mom had been shot twice, mm-hmm. and she was trying to hide her mom, and help her. But yet in the 911 call, she had said that she was hiding in the back of the Walgreens store, which was the store next door, and she didn't even mention her mom. And so I put in my video, you know, Emma, why didn't you mention your mom? Well, it's because these people are actors.
Right.
And it is part of a play. And so that's what we're seeing all the time now. And I ask myself, are people becoming numb to these, all these shootings now? I mean, it's very disheartening when I go through my day-to-day life, when I live my real life and work my real job. And, you know, like I talk to people and they regurgitate to me the mainstream media garbage about these shootings. And I just, it's so, it floors me so much on how disappointing it is that there are so many people that are just blind to what's really happening with these shootings and Boston bombings and all kinds of stuff. They just go along to get along.
Yeah. I mean, generally speaking, there's, you know, the average person out there is not going to investigate. They're not going to really sit down and do a lot of critical thinking, you know, towards this stuff, because it's actually pretty, okay, here's something too. It's that, okay, so we're in Obama's second term, and he was kind of touted along by the right wing as like, okay, this guy, he's the gun control, he's the gun grabber, and he's going to get our guns. And then Eric Holder is the, attorney general, and he's been public, very public about, you know, being a gun control advocate and all that. And I look at the political system as pure theater, right? So whatever is unfolding out of any administration is scripted and pre-planned ahead of time, and it probably not even reflective of these characters or these personas that are put out there in front of us, like Obama or Holder. I view them in the same way that I would look at a soap opera actor or a professional wrestler or something. Like they're just going through choreography. They're not working out of their own mind in any way,
exactly.
Shape, or form. Yeah, and so we're in Obama's second term, and all these shootings start to happen, like one after the other, after the other, after the other. So from that perspective, what is the likelihood that these are any way, shape, or form real? You know, it's like, to me, they can't be. And then, you know, there's another aspect that I don't hear discussed a lot, is that you will... I have so many examples. It's ridiculous at this point. Where, okay, and I was trying to remember the name of that television show, and I found it. It was Grey's Anatomy, and the name of the episode is Disarm. And it came out. I was wrong about that. It didn't come out 2 weeks. It came out 2 days before the Gifford shooting. 2 days.
Okay.
The shooter is named Jared. In the television show, the shooter is named Jared, and there's a character that gets shot. One of the people that gets shot is named Arizona, and there's a scenario with one of the shooting victims where she gets part of her skull blown off, and then they miraculously save her through some elaborate medical process with freezing her skull and all that stuff, just like they did with the Giffords. And, you know, you bring up the, you know, this this procedure that the is it the Navy that's pushing it? The suspended animation medical procedure and all that, that they're proposing being used on soldiers and all that, that you bring up?
Right. It's the Navy.
Right.
And also the Army has funded
and
research
the Army.
Projects
yeah.
as well.
Right. And, you know, I see these events as, okay, they're conducted just, you know, just like a made-for-television movie, and they're done in the same way, but they're fleshed out. You know, they have a lot of times maybe real people that were in these communities, and, you know, this is something that was brought out in a couple of recent interviews, like we were discussing with Jay Dyer and his research into, like, you know, the CIA and Hollywood, and how, you know, there's all these intricate connections between, you know, the CIA and Hollywood, and a lot of stuff that transpired during the Cold War, where you would end up with people who are their whole entire life was committed to being, you know, spies, and they would, you know, sacrifice family and friends and go and blend into a certain community and stay there for years and years and do their particular missions. And I don't believe the Cold War was real. I believe the whole, there's all kinds of evidence that, and a lot of people have come out and said the whole thing was entirely a ruse. It was at the top, you know, everybody was, you know, arm in arm, the KGB and the CIA, the MI6 and all the intelligence agencies are interlocked at the top. There was no real Cold War. There was no real, actual dispute between Russia and the United States. That was all theater.
Exactly.
And the big part, they said, well, why do that? Why do something like that? People can't wrap their minds around that. But we'll look how it serves the system of control where you can create the spy culture of people who will live out a lie at the behest of this sort of abstract ideal of, you know, for God and country, right? And,
right.
You know, there was just... there's a series called The Americans, and Jay Dyer was saying that's a good one to watch as far as you can get insight into how far these people go into this false identity and stuff and live it, you know, to the point where they're breaking themselves down psychologically, where they have like all these psychological problems, but they're basically living a complete lie, and they intermix and intermingle with people, so-called normal people that are going about their day-to-day lives, and they you know, make friends, and they blend into the community, and, you know, but they have a particular role to fulfill and a job to fill. And I said, well, that, you know, when you think about that, and you're thinking about crisis actors and stuff that we're seeing right now, this all this evidence of like, okay, these people are actors, like, what the hell is going on with this? You know, it's like, well, This is the new Cold War, and it is the war against the average person. You know, it always has been, but this is the way it's now manifesting itself. Where they've built up and designed this culture, the spy culture, and it's being used against the average person, and the people participating in it have ideological. I don't know how much proof I can offer up for it, but I believe that a lot of times these people have a certain ideological bent, you know, either a socialist type of, you know, mindset or something like that, you know, or a Marxist mindset, where they wholeheartedly believe in gun control and all that, and they'll participate for the greater good of their cause, you know, and yeah, they'll go off and move somewhere or participate in being a victim family member or something like that. I think that's the way this stuff works. And you know, there's a lot of documentation and stuff out there where you could point to where, you know, the CIA has been doing this stuff for decades and decades, where they stage and fake stuff. They stage and fake funerals. There's a Northwood document that talks about that very specific thing. Oh, yeah, let's shoot down an airliner, say it was full of college students, fake funerals, and you know, that was the Joint Chiefs of Staff, you know, allegedly that, you know, was proposing that. But that's a very real thing, and I think that needs to be incorporated. I think it's good to incorporate that into kind of developing a framework of how to understand this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I applaud you. That's just amazing. I mean, I totally agree with you on all of that. And I mean, and you know, there's quite a bit of information that can, you know, pretty much back up a lot of what you just said there. And, you know, it's like one of my contributing writers, Jack Mullen, he just put out an article. It's called For a Limited Time Only. And it's an amazing article, but he does quote the CIA director, I believe his name was William Casey, and he had made a remark in 1981. And anyway, he basically said that we'll know that our disinformation program is a success when everything the American public believes is false. And so here we are. here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, right, exactly. I mean, isn't that quite the statement there? I mean, that isn't that just totally over the top? I mean, really, I mean, this guy's just coming out with it. Oh, yeah, we want everybody everywhere to, you know, to believe the opposite of the truth. And that's our job? Really?
Yeah, it's exactly. Like, but it is the truth because, you know, like, I mean, we can't, I mean, how can this industry, they've created, this is an industry that's been growing. I mean, all these special medical ops, you have them, now they're employed, you know, they're all deployed now in all the local communities. And, you know, I mean, everything is about wrapped around the 911 system and safety and security. And, you know, it's just an amazing heist on the American mind. And so, you know, we've got the nation is divided by exactly what you said earlier. It's divided by people wanting to just, you know, go along to get along and believe what they're told, and it's all for the safety, security of the nation. We have to protect our children. You know, it's always the children involved. And here, really, you take off the entire veil, and you're only left with just a shamble of lies. And the fact that this was all controlled, and it was created and controlled from the very beginning to do exactly this. So really, it is a successful program.
Yeah, and I think, too, another way to view, let's say, the Gifford shooting, because that's what we're talking about, is I think a good analogy is it's basically an infomercial, and they're selling the public on different products. And one of the products they want to sell is gun control legislation, you know, that's tied into the medical industry and all that, like you're talking about. And then you brought up this, you know, suspended animation medical procedure, and so now that is, you know, they can point to Giffords, who was never shot in the head. That's completely fake. I sent you that link where she's using the same scripted flub, or she's confusing the word yogurt and yoga.
Right.
And that's kind of she's trying to get you to believe that, oh, she's fumbling for words because her brain is, you know, scrambled from the gunshot wound. But, you know, they don't bother to give her different scripted lines. She uses the same little joke over and over, where she's, oh, so what is this, Mark? Yogurt? And I said, no, sweetheart, yoga. Oh yeah, yoga, and they do this multiple times. It's crazy. Yeah.
I mean, it's either terrible acting or terrible management from the handler. I totally agree with you. It's just a scripted stage mess when it comes to the Gabrielle Giffords event. And however, you know, I will push forward into trying to find out the truth about Jerry Loeffner, because if Jerry Loeffner is a real person that was used as a patsy to, you know, take the fall for a dead judge, you know, then, you know, that needs to be exposed. I mean, we can't just let people sit in prison for these types of events, like, you know, we've seen so many times in the past where people are just nabbed and used as a patsy. Yeah. But in the same respect, you know, we also need to find out the truth. You know, I mean, if all these court documents have been staged, then, you know, they need to be exposed as well. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, this is real documentation that there's a man in the system right now, and none of the story adds up.
Yeah, but I mean, I talk about this a lot too, just kind of, you know, I like this one quote that goes to the extent, it's like, you know, somebody asking, like, well, you know, you believe in conspiracies, and his response is, well, you know, the entire government and the entire system is just, you know, one big conspiracy, in the sense that, well, I mean, for one thing, you talk about Jared Lee Loeffner potentially being a real guy that is being completely railroaded by the system and being unfairly, just relentlessly, you know, persecuted and unfairly imprisoned and drugged and all that. But I think that is something that in our system, is pretty common. Like, he's not the only guy that's in there that doesn't deserve to be in there, that is
exactly.
Yeah, either rotting in prison or in these medical institutions or psychiatric hospitals and stuff like that. So, I think that is something that is fairly common in this system. And so, yeah, so to take a real guy and to use him for an agenda, I don't think that there would be any, you know. But then, you know, there's a possibility that maybe he is himself a sort of an actor, and that he will, you know, do he'll perform his role and then maybe go off somewhere else to live or something like that. I don't know about that. I mean, I think maybe the whole agenda maybe be better served by having an actual person just get the shaft, you know, and they just use them for the agenda. And you know, he's the only so just talking about how the opposite of what we perceive these things to be is actually true. So, like, instead of, you know, him being the victimizer, he's actually the only victim that we see. Like, he's the only one that's actually gonna lose anything. But everybody else that was participant is just fulfilling some kind of sick, twisted role that is a long-held tradition in a spy culture type, you know, scenario.
Yeah, exactly. And there are questionable things too that, you know, and I, believe me, I've taken the same road, what you just said. Like, I've tried to really just shed light on every aspect of every situation that this kid could have been. And was he an actor? Was he a real person? Was he? And that's why I had to go on this hunt to try to find some evidence that he was real. Because, you know, when I first began the investigation, I didn't know if he was real. He just, the way they were flipping around his different pictures, I literally assumed that this was just an actor. And it wasn't until I started digging in that I started realizing that, you know, there is some background here. Like, there is stuff that can't be ignored that is tangible evidence. And also in the fact too that, you know, I did speak to someone, I did write about this situation in my book, but I did speak personally to a woman that, you know, gave me information that led me to believe that, you know, Jerry Loeffner was targeted by the FBI, and he was harassed, and she gave me some very good details of, you know, enormous amounts of information about situations that this Jerry Loeffner was in while he was attending this college out in Pima Community College is where he attended. And so I've gone down all these roads as well, you know, whether he's an actor, whether he's not. But, you know, I just really, you know, I know that each situation is different. And like I said, I believe that, you know, the people that are behind the scenes, these criminals that are plotting these events, and they just move on from one event to another like it's some kind of, you know, full-time job, you know, like, mm-hmm. Well, we performed that one, so let's go to the next one. And this is what the next script's going to say. And, you know, whether they use people, but just like with the Sandy Hook shooting, I believe there are real dead people associated with that, not the children and not Adam Lanza or anything, but I mean real dead people that were actors. And I wrote about that an article I came out with just a few days after the Sandy Hook shooting, and it's called The Bait and Switch at Sandy Hook. And I wrote in detail about things that were going on behind the scenes that I believe to this day are not even being talked about. Nobody's even remotely interested in, you know, the real dead people behind the scenes of the Sandy Hook hoax, and that is that there are dead people. Mm-hmm. And those dead people consist of doctors, they consist of police officers, they consist of actors. And so, you know, like, there are people that are dying during the process of these scripts being played out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, like, the guy, he's probably lucky to be alive that didn't participate in the Giffords hoax, you know? And he just, hey, I'm not going to do that. And, you know, he just decided, well, I'm not going to talk about it. I'm just going to, and then they reported it. They put a particular spin on it, and I guess they decided to leave it to that because I guess the guy is still alive as far as I know. But, you know, that's maybe an example of it, where, you know, you got people who are being made examples of, you know, okay, yeah, here's what happens to you when you go running your mouth about it, you know, and like I would think that would probably most likely be an element to all this, certainly. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the fact that they're, you know, they've listed, I mean, just prior to that event in Tucson, you know, Janet Napolitano had announced that, you know, we would be seeing the lone wolves, you know, shooting up the place pretty soon. And it seems like whenever there's some kind of change in, you know, like the new terrorist warning, it seems like then it's played out, you know, as the situation occurs. And so, I mean, obviously you and I get it and many other people get it, but there are unfortunately so many people that believe that, you know, Americans shouldn't have guns or, you know, or even placing white people as, you know, the people that are to blame, you know, that we're the most dangerous, you know, with gun owners. And it's yeah. just outrageously insane what's going on behind the scenes, you know, with the recent shootings, with the racism and tied into everything. And I mean, if it's very disheartening, and it's, you know, it just blows my mind how much information is being pumped out there, and people are really just buying into it. Like, they truly believe that the Confederate flag caused, you know, Dylan Storm to shoot. I mean, but they'll be like, well, okay, well, that's the reason. Get rid of the flag.
I know. It's just, on one level, you know, it's, and this is pretty typical, I think. I mean, it always has been in within, I call it civilization because I think it's, you know, it's that broad and sweeping, the stuff we're talking about. You know, Stalin said it, you know, we shall win through use of slogans and just simplistic slogans and tokens and things like flags and stuff like that where, really it's just a piece of cloth, but you know it's got some you know associations built up around this certain configuration of stars and colors and printed on a flag, and then you know people will get very emotional over like the American flag or a flag or something like that, and they don't understand that, okay, what you're doing is you are worshiping a talisman. And and another interesting thing that I bring this up a lot too is like, well, go read up on what a cult is, and that's one of the definitions of that, you know, signs that maybe you're in a cult is sort of veneration or adoration towards symbols or idols or you know a figurehead, you know, a particular persona. You know, America is a cult, and that I firmly believe that is America. You know, nationalism, Americanism, and stuff is a cult by definition. People don't see it that way because they've been raised from birth, you know, to be indoctrinated into it, mm-hmm. and it is just all mind control. And you know, we have these institutions like Tavistock, and then they'll kind of like, they're not really hiding the fact that, you know, they are there to study the effects of psychology on this thing called public relations. And, you know, I think that's an important thing to understand, too, is public relations is basically a dressed up term for propaganda, which is a form of, you know, is obviously a form of mind control. And what better way to shape the minds of the people than to script an event, to play it out, to have complete and utter absolute control over it, since it's, you know, as much control as a director would have over a movie, and to ensure, you know, that things don't go off the rails and go into some unexpected direction, like, let's say, for instance, Jared Lofter is a mind control patsy, and then he's like, okay, they give him the trigger word, like applesauce or whatever, and he's in there looking for applesauce in the store, and the next thing you know, his eyes roll to the back of his head, and then he pulls out his gun and starts blasting or something like that. And let's just say it so happens that there's a concealed carry holder that's like standing 2 feet away from him, and then so they boom, Lofner's dead, and then okay, end of story. Okay, what are we going to do now? We had all this, you know, legislation drafted up, and we had all this stuff that was going to be rolled out, and these 9/11 associations and all this stuff. What are we going to do now? Oh, well, then back to the drawing board, I guess. And you know, it's like that just doesn't sound even remotely plausible to me, you know.
I know, it's amazing the scripts that are being written, and one of the things is and one of my contributing writers, Jack Mullen, he writes in his latest article, and this is just so mind-bending, but he says, lies as big as pyramids, pulling like gravity on thought, steering discourse, and presenting only lighted pathways along streets of deceit. And that's exactly what it is. It's just a pile of lies that are as big as pyramids, and they do pull on the gravity of our thoughts, and, you know, they do steer discourse, and that's what they're supposed to do, and we're supposed to stay on these pathways along all these streets of deceit. And, you know, it's just, that's exactly the way that it was set up from the get-go. Like you said, with Tavistock and all the lies about World War One, World War Two, everything in between, you know, and the fact that, you know, this, the whole system in the United States is all, it's basically just, you know, there's two parts to the story of every story. And, you know, people don't understand because they don't understand where it is that their position is in growing up here in America, you know, and who they are and whether they're, you know, a slave or not to the system. And, you know, the people that are beginning to wake up to all the deceit and the lies and the pathways that are all false paradigms are realizing that, you know, these things are, you know, just faked from the get-go, and it includes everything. And so from the Federal Reserve to, mm-hmm. you know, what's happening now with our monetary system, the economic collapse. And, you know, I found it very interesting that the latest shooting, you know, here's a man that's, I believe, 56 years old, and he's posting on the internet, you know, all kinds of stuff about the coming economic collapse. And then what, he just shows up at a movie theater and starts shooting? I mean, this is just insanity. But, of course, then we have to tie in the drug dealers, the pharma drug dealers, and then you have the alternative mainstream now that's just like, he was just a, you know, a mentally ill, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, there's more to the story, and, you know, they want us to tie the mental health industry with the prison systems because that's how the next avenue of industry is growing. And that's exactly what they're doing. You know, they're creating bigger prisons everywhere. They want people, you know, they want to control people that are allegedly mentally ill, that have been on drugs. But what people don't understand is that it was all a ploy from the get-go, you know, because it was the pharmaceutical companies that put out all this mind control to lure the people into the drugs. And now the drugs are causing all these industries to change, you know, like mental health tied with the prison systems. And I mean, it's almost back to like the mad science days, you know, and so now the doors are wide open thanks to the Jared Lee Lofner event that they can just forcibly medicate anybody they want to. So it's a form of, it's a new lobotomy. You know, it's the new, you know, Jared Lee Lofner was the new lobotomy for torture in this country, and it unfortunately is tied to mental health and the prison systems, and they're deeply getting more tied together all the time.
Right, yeah, absolutely. You know, as far as like people are that have, you know, mental illnesses and you know, they end up being put in jail, you know, and then, you know, they spend all this time in jail. They don't go to any kind of treatment center or anything like that. So that just shows the absolute hypocrisy and the sickness of the system is that, okay, so you got somebody that's designated as having an illness, And the way they're treated is they're locked up in a jail cell. You know, it's like, well, imagine doing that for, like, somebody who's got diabetes. And then, okay, they go into a diabetic coma and, you know, maybe, get into a car accident or something like that. And then, okay, we're going to put you in jail. Yeah, and then, you know, by the way, when you're in there, you're not going to get any of your medications or anything. We're just going to lock you in a cell. That's what they do to mentally ill people. And, or, you know, a heart attack, a stroke victim or something like that. Oh, you had a stroke? Well, yeah, you're going to jail, buddy. Sorry. It's like, that'd be absolutely absurd, and I think most people would see that. But on the other hand, it's like, it's accepted that, you know, somebody exhibits, you know, certain behavior, and then they get put in jail, and, you know, it doesn't matter whether or not anybody else got hurt. So it's not a matter of, you know, locking somebody up as a matter of public safety. It's just, oh, you're exhibiting this behavior. It doesn't matter what your, you know, diagnosis is. We're gonna go ahead and put you in jail. You know, and that's something that goes on all the time. And, it's just incredible. Yeah, it's just I see a lot of this as, it's just a continuation of what's always kind of been there. And we are just going into sort of a next phase of the overall business plan, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. It's a business plan, and war is business, and these are just, you know, it's just stepping into all that. And that's why I like to tie in, you know, the special medical ops to these. And we see it at other events, you know, just so you know, like, there's other events as well. Like, for instance, the Washington Navy Yard shooting. I had done a timeline release following that shooting with Aaron Alexis. And anyway, I followed a timeline, and I put the timeline out, and, you know, there again, there's obvious evidence that this is that was definitely a drill. But, you know, people think it's just, you know, like your minor drills, which contain like your state agencies or whatever, but these are actually military drills, and mm-hmm. where Marines were actually involved. And so I totally agree with you. I mean, there's just so many things we could talk about till the end of time as far as that's concerned. But as far as the Jerry Lee Loeffner event, like, you know, I really appreciate you letting me, you know, come onto the show and talk to me about the Jerry Lee Loeffner event, simply because, you know, people need to not forget about it. I mean, right. You know, that's what people are destined to do, is, you know, they just forget about it. And whenever I bring it up to people, they don't even know what I'm talking about a lot of the times.
Really?
But
mm-hmm.
yeah, or they just remember his scary face and, you know, the fact that he killed a bunch of people. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, I mean, it has to continue to be talked about, just like other events like 9/11 and the Oklahoma bombing and the theater shooting. And, you know, I mean, they just we can't just let them go into the past. We have to follow them, and we have to tie the agendas together and find out what's really the big picture behind it all. And I mean, we can put out, you know, poses all day long and comparisons of people that are, is this person an actor or is this person not an actor or whatever. But the thing yeah. is those are diversions as well. I mean,
right.
You know, we have to be able to pick and actually see take the whole veil off and see the big picture of a continuation of lies that's been going on for a long, long time.
Right, right. Exactly. I think that's a very good point. They kind of get kind of bogged down into the particulars about, these events and that sort of stuff. I mean, I don't fault anybody for doing that. I myself, yeah, I'm all for exploring kind of like what's the implications of this? I mean, what is the objective, that what are the goals that are trying to be accomplished, and what does it mean as far as for the average person? How's it going to affect our lives directly? You know, which it is. I mean, this stuff does affect, you know, our lives. You know, there may be one day when maybe you know, whether or not you're a gun owner, maybe there's one day where you have some particular situation where it's saying, you know, I would like to have a gun, maybe to protect myself or something like that. And then you go, and then I'm just purely speaking hypothetically, but you say you go and like say, oh, well, yeah, you're going to have to register. And then you register and then says, oh, well, you know, we found out that you have a prescription for sleeping pills back in, you know, 1999. And that is going to disqualify you from owning a gun, you know. And, you know, that is what's coming down the road. I mean, as far as I can tell about all this, you know, stuff that I see happen, the developments that are coming out of all this stuff, you know. And it seems to me like they're not going to put the brakes on it anytime soon, as far as I can tell. They just had another one in a theater, right? In it's so hard to keep track of this stuff. Was it
Louisiana?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, oh yeah, 11 victims, 2 died. So you got your 9 and your 11, and then you got your all your scripted talking points with oh yeah, the guy was mentally deranged, and of course he got a hold of a gun, and you know, how do we stop mentally deranged people from getting hold of guns? And it's just the same script. It's like, oh yeah, well, here's another event that falls right in line with those scripted talking points. Like, how convenient, you know. And
right, and the fact that they want to bring the First Amendment in as well as the Second Amendment, and that's to restrict our, you know, our voices. And if we do, we could be held liable. And so I totally agree with you. There, it's just all so in your face, and it's a backdoor into the medical records. I've been saying that for a couple of years now, that, you know, this is all just a backdoor into your medical records so that they can keep another database full of people that they've literally, you know, the drug dealers have literally, you know, created, ruined many lives with. And then now what? You know, now they, you know, it's just a way to get our guns. But, you know, people want to believe that gun ownership should be just, you know, with people that are, you know, have some type of formal, lawful or military background. But the average citizen shouldn't own it because we're too dangerous. And so it's basically re-scripting the mind and deforming who it is that they want the people to believe has the right to own or have guns. And those, unfortunately, that they're scripting are all in authoritarian figure, you know, positions. And the rest of us can just, you know, dial 911 and wait for the heroes to show up.
I know. Yeah, it's just absolutely ridiculous. And then, okay, it's just the contradictory nature of the propaganda, and it could be so flagrantly contradictory. You know, we have this a threat of Islamic terrorism as well going on, and so the idea is, oh, well, you know, there could be a Al-Qaeda, you know, hiding behind your hedgerow over the side of your house. It, you know, they're everywhere, basically, in other words. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, so, yeah, let's get rid of guns then. You know what I mean? It makes no sense. It's like,
right,
you would want to arm the population if that was truly the case, you know? It's like, it's like you would absolutely do the opposite of what they're proposing. But it's, it just goes to show that none of this has to make any sense. It doesn't have to follow logic. It doesn't have to follow past experience or statistical truths about you know, the likelihood of, you know, somebody getting some high body count. It doesn't have to follow any of that. It's just la-la land. And because it's presented on television as being real, people buy it, you know. And it's like, yeah. And then, you know, like I said, it's all just, you know, these things are just infomercials, basically, to sell you a product, which is more greater enslavement, basically. It's like, well, you know, it's like just any kind of product that you might buy to, you know, keep you safe. You know, it's like, well, yeah, this is a product we want to sell, and it's more government intrusion, and, you know, we need to tell more people what they can and can't do, and then, you know, we might have to forcibly medicate people here and there, but it's all for your safety. And then you can imagine some product, you know, that's, you know, it's all in a can and it's ready to go, and then you open it and you're like safer, you know, just inhale, yeah.
Yeah, and that's
inhale
so
the vapor
true.
That comes out.
I always say, you know, who's making the most money off all this? And it's definitely the survivalists.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's just a whole new industry now. And anyway, I understand what you mean. It is scripted everywhere, and the boogeyman's always at the front door, on top of your roof, or underneath your bed, and you know, we see that, and you know, just even the billboards going up in every single state. Like, take for instance Maryland. And one of my contributing writers, like I said, Jack Mullen, he wrote an article. It was really interesting, called Maryland's Bit Part in Homeland Security Theater. And it was just almost a funny way of exposing the fact that, you know, as you drive around the state of Maryland, whose slogan is the free state, all you see are these billboards everywhere that are just these Orwellian type surveillance state, you know, billboards, great big giant huge big screen outdoor billboards that are advising the citizens on terrorist activity. Like, for instance, you know, you just come around a big bend and there's this giant billboard that says, you know, terror tips, dial 1-800, blah, 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 you know, if you see something, say something, you know, it's a crazy indoctrinating thing that you just want to just, you know, you want the electricity to be shut off to these billboards. Or it's such a theater, and it's going up everywhere. It's not just Maryland, it's Missouri, everywhere. I mean, you name it, it's all just a grant as long as they can get the bad guys and keep pretending and keep, you know, deploying all these, you know, drills out so they could pretend like they're in war on the homeland to, you know, get the bad guys. Then there's always money associated. And where do they put them? In these great big giant billboards and mind control thoughts. And, you know, there's definitely, you have to question, you know, are your thoughts really your own? Because it seems like we live in a world now where, you know, just the matrix is just so giant when it comes to whether, you know, you're really seeing your own thoughts or hearing them, or whether somebody else is telling you what to do.
Oh, yeah, 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 that's, you gotta, if you step back and you look at the big picture, and then you take into account that you have how many 300 million people, or however many, well, I guess that would include children and everybody, but, basically people just go through kind of like a scripted procedure in their daily lives, where everybody kind of lives out their lives pretty much identical to everybody else in the system. And, you know, they go into the 40, 50, 60 hour work week. They put their children in the public indoctrination camps, public school indoctrination camps, and they take their vaccines, they do everything they're told, and everybody's kind of in lockstep, and then on the other hand, we're told that, oh yeah, we believe in individualism and freedom. And, you know, it's just so obvious. I mean, to me, it's so obvious that, like, okay, well, you're looking at, taking the population overall, it's like, oh yeah, you're looking at, you know, basically cult members that all are all kind of buying into the same basic ideology and, you know, how their lives should be led. And but then, you know, it's obviously economic pressures and stuff that are imposed upon you from the time you were born, you know, that kind of like forces your hand. I wouldn't exclude that, you know, from the state of affairs. But yeah, but Stephanie, I appreciate you coming on here and sharing all this information. I really learned a lot about the whole Loeffner thing, and I want to check out your book and see what goes on there. Just one more thing I wanted to ask you about real quick. On the cover of your book, what's that document?
That is a document that I obtained watching mainstream media, and I believe that was a shot that ABC News, if I remember correctly, wrote, or that they had aired that prior, just following the shooting, whenever Sheriff Dupnik was on TV And so I took a screenshot of that because it was the one and only time that it's ever showed up in all of the history of any type of mainstream media showing or anything in the AP press that I could ever find. And so that's definitely what it was Operation Safeway.
I was like, holy crap, what is that? You know, Operation Safeway, what the?
Yeah.
And that was just shown briefly, and then it said, oh, yeah, we'll show you that, nothing to see here, then never a mention of it again or nothing.
Exactly. It was a one-time deal.
That's,
so I just happened to be
wild.
Watching the show. So,
that's
anyway.
Wild, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, that was real good. I appreciate it. And, yeah, maybe we could do that again. And, because, yeah, there, like you said, there's a lot to talk about. So, let's keep in touch on the... Skype or email, and maybe we do this again in the future.
Yeah, thank you so much, and I appreciate coming on the show, and thanks for listening, and thanks for your input as well, and I really appreciate it, and so we'll speak again.
Good deal. And your website is thegovernmentrag.com.
Yep, thegovernmentrag.com.
Yep, okay. Cool. All right, thanks a lot, Stephanie.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
You have a good one. Take care. Bye.
So